Hello, everyone. Hello. We're just waiting a couple of minutes for people to arrive, but we might kick off. So, hi, my name's Nick, and I'm head of theatre at the Pleasance, and have been one of the Stamp organising team helping to set up Stamp Connects. So, welcome to Stamp Connects, and for those who are joining us for the first time, Stamp is a network of over 50 organisations who work together to take practical collective action to improve the ways in which artists are supported by our organisation and valued in society more wisely. Stamp Connects Online, which is where we are today, is the biggest event we run every year, but we normally do this in person at Shoreditch Town Hall. So this is the first time we're hosting the event online. So do forgive us if we have any technical glitches at any point, but we will attempt for this to be as smooth as possible. So all sessions today are captioned by Otter AI. To activate those closed captions, you can click on the closed caption button at the bottom of your screen, or found by clicking on the three dots at the top of your screen if you're on a mobile. You can then click View Closed Captions. You can also see a full transcript of the event by clicking on the top left-hand corner. I'm probably pointing in a different direction. It's top left on my screen, which says Otter AI, and that'll open a separate window with a live transcript. If you could only use the chat function throughout the show to pose questions to the panel, and Anna Dominion from the Barbican, if Anna wants to give a wave, and I are here by picking up chat questions as well as kind of any support you need during the sessions. If you have any issues, please drop either one of us a message. At the end of the session, during the question section, we will pose these questions back to the panel, and hopefully that way we can condense down questions on a similar theme and make the best use of the question time at the end. As I mentioned, if you're having any trouble with your tech or Zoom, both Anna and I are on hand to help out, and you can write a direct message to us in the chat and we'll be able to help you. We are going to record the sessions. I'm looking at Kaya. Was I meant to have done something there, or is it already recording? I'm going to
keep it. If you just hit record. Oh, yeah, it's in. It's happening. Yeah. It's good.
So we are going to record today's session with a view to sharing the audio file on the Stamp website afterwards. But if you have any concerns about this, please message either one of us, and do feel free to either have your camera on or off, but it is the audio that we're looking to share. And finally, today's session is BSL interpreted. Oh, I've lost my name. Yeah, today's session is being BSL interpreted by Laura M and by Laura G. So I'm just going to spotlight Laura M, who will speak first, and I spotlighted them so that any users who would like to follow along with Laura can pin her screen. Halfway through the session, we'll pause briefly, and we're going to swap to Laura G. So do bear with us about halfway through while we do this. So I'm just going to go back to the gallery. And I'd now like to pass over to Joe, the chair for this session. Good luck.
Thanks, Nick. So hello, everybody. I'm Joe Chard, and I'll be chairing, as Nick said. So the way the session will work is each of us will introduce ourselves briefly, and then we'll have a conversation for about 20 minutes, leaving about 15 to 20 minutes at the end for audience questions. So I'm a queer activist and producer working across the Guildhall School of Music and Drama and Barbican. Before becoming a producer, I worked as an environmental and human rights campaigner for a number of different charities and organisations. Currently, I lead a new department called Creative Partnerships and Programming, which are, amongst other things, focuses on testing unorthodox and new ways of working in order to make the arts more representative and open. This includes working with communities and the charity sector to create projects that place people with lived experience at the centre, and working on projects that are co-created and directed by people mainly in and around the City of London and neighbouring boroughs. At the moment, we're working on a festival called Disrupt, which is taking place in July. That will be exploring how communities and the performing arts have collaborated during the pandemic, with a particular focus on new or different ways of working. And one of the aims in the work that I do is to create a space to test out different models of producing, funding and organising, so that we can see how and if these changes can affect some of the structural inequalities that currently impact the arts, with the overall ambition of providing greater access and participation. And so now I'm going to ask each of our panel members to introduce themselves. We're going to start with Shamira Turner, who is an artist, musician, performance maker, and the co-director of She Goat Performance Company. Shamira, when you're ready.
Hi, I'm Shamira, and for anyone who needs a Description, I'm a white woman with a blonde hair cut into a fringe and a bright yellow shirt. So as Jo says, I'm the co-artistic director of She Goat and the producer, and we make work that really sits in the kind of overlapping place of live music gig and theatrical performance. Our work mucks around with gender and is rooted in autobiography. And a key focus for us is making our work inherently accessible to visually impaired audiences and finding creative and economic ways to do that because we are small scale. I'm also a founding member and associate artist of Little Bulb Theatre, so have made and toured numerous works with them over the years. But worth mentioning in this context is our work for rural touring. And for anyone who doesn't know what rural touring is, that's where you make a show that can cram into a van, including all of the bodies and lights and whatever tech you need, and then drive out to more rural locations and set that show up in their village halls and community spaces. So we've made 2 shows for rural touring and 3 tours with the Farnham Maltings over the years. I also work with other companies in various capacities, as I know we all do, shape-shifting for the needs of a project. And worth noting in this context is 2 shows. One is Jasmine Johnson's More Than Two, which was supported by the Barbican and culminated in a staged concept album. And for that, we worked with people identifying as queer, polyamorous, and it drew on verbatim text and also put those individuals into the show and the work. So it was a really cohesive experience with those communities. And Human Jam made a couple of years with Camden People Theatre. We worked with an assembled community choir of Camden residents impacted by HS2 and the renovations around Euston. And so again, that was about giving them a voice and putting them front and centre in a theatre production at CBT. With She Goat, we were due to tour our latest show, The Undefinable, last year, and were 2 dates into the tour when theatres closed their doors. And that tour had community engagement activities woven throughout it. So the show is about unconventional and nonconformist relationships and really the lack of language or prohibitive nature of language around defining relationships and expressing those feelings that we feel are undefinable. These were conversations we really wanted to have with people on the road. And so when the tour needed to be cancelled, we reimagined that activity into an online and digital version, which became our Curious Hearts Song Clubs. And these are online listening parties where each one is bespoke and usually the other half of She Goat, tailor the events around the participants joining us. So that's really an exercise in creating a safe digital space for a genuine exchange of ideas. And it focuses on reaching out to communities identifying as LGBTQAI+, queer elders, vulnerable, isolated, and we hope that we've done 6 of those events, so we hope that those kind of generate mini communities with each event. And I think that's me. Thank you.
Thanks, Shamira. We'll talk more about those things in a bit. Next, I would like to introduce Suzanne. So Suzanne Gorman is the Artistic Director of Mara Productions and a champion for social change and racial justice in the arts. Suzanne, go ahead and introduce yourself when you're ready.
Hello, thank you, Jo and Shamira. My name is Suzanne Gorman. I'm the Artistic Director of Mara Productions. I am a British South Asian woman, and I am wearing a kind of pink top, and I'm in my office at home. And this morning, I suppose I wanted just to give a very quick overview of Mara Productions and then talk about 2 projects that we have run that involve community engagement. Mara Productions, we make diverse theatre to create change. And we do that because we genuinely believe that everyone, regardless of age, ability, culture or class, should have access to good quality theatre experiences. And so what we look to do is to bring together organisations and individuals who really want their work to promote social change and also really encourage racial justice in the arts. And so the way in which we do that is we have kind of three strands of work. Firstly, we make work that is led by ethnically diverse artists. Secondly, we look at promoting workforce diversity across the arts. So that's about kind of looking at who is working in the arts, working with organisations, either through research projects or facilitation or training, to promote inclusion across the kind of workforce of the arts. And then thirdly, we also engage with young people and communities through community engagement projects, through participation in the arts. And what we look to do with our engagement projects is really about unlocking creative potential of people and developing skills. We also want to really demystify theatre processes so that they become more accessible for everybody to understand how we make theatre. We look to profile ethnically diverse role models when we're doing this work. And, you know, ultimate aims are to inspire a diverse pool of artists and industry professionals for the future, as well as reaching new audiences and really engaging those that traditionally can be underrepresented or least engaged in theatre. And I thought I would just kind of give an overview of two of our projects. The first is the Croydon Avengers. And this was a piece of theatre that we developed and toured for young audiences. And it told the story of three superhero young refugees. And community engagement was really, really at the heart of this project right from the start, because it was inspired by a participation project that we ran called Superheroes South of the River with a group of young refugees and also young Croydoners. And the project itself used theatre and comic book storytelling and martial arts to explore ethnically diverse role models and superheroes. And using that kind of cross arts form, you know, sort of works very much for us when we're working with communities who may not particularly have English as a first language. So using different art forms we found was really good for enabling more participation. And what we did is we invited our writer, Oladipo Agbolowaje, to be part of that actual participation project. And after that, he then did go away and write our piece of theatre, which we took back to our young refugees. And then as the piece itself developed, we went into another R&D process, did work in progress performances, but then opened that up to more young people. So we actually then shared our processes with a youth theatre, with a school, with other young audiences, getting their feedback on the work as it was developing, so that they could really have that conversation with us as we were making work that was then toured eventually to other young audiences. And alongside that, at every stage, we were running our kind of superheroes projects. And when we were touring the final piece, we did a video project with another group of young refugees and then shared that at one of our venues. So that was kind of a piece of work that we did, looking specifically at young people, but very much about kind of young refugees and asylum seekers. The piece of work that we're developing at the moment is called Benny and the Grey Cats. And that's got a slightly different kind of mode of community engagement, because the starting point for this actually was it has actually come from my own particular family history. The piece tells the story of a family of Anglo-Indian musicians who migrate from South India to Sheffield in the 1960s. And we started this, actually explored it through a Barbican open lab. And very much at that particular stage, we immediately invited a group of older people, some of whom were kind of from the Anglo-Indian community, and also a group of younger people to come into that open lab. So we ran an intergenerational workshop looking at the themes that we were exploring within the piece and also sharing with them very early kind of stage material. And since then, I suppose our community engagement, as the piece has developed, so has the engagement that we're doing alongside it. So we're running a program called Roots to Roots, which then looks at the very simple model that I took to start Benny and the Grey Cats, which is looking at your family heritage or cultural heritage as a starting point for your own creative response. So we're working with either young artists or young people to run Roots to Roots, and we're about to embark on our third Roots to Roots project. We run these projects in partnership with other organisations up in Sheffield, and this year we're also running Talking About My Generation, which was something that we were planning to do last year, but we did put on hold. And that works with an older people's group. It's going to be working with South Asian women in Sheffield, looking at the 1960s, looking at Sheffield, and migration stories. And again, what we're looking to do is kind of bring people together. So our aim for this year is that we will bring our older people's group, our younger people's group, and also the Benny team as we go into another R&D physically, if we can, fingers crossed, together at the Migration Matters Festival in Sheffield. And we are also going to be sharing and showcasing the Talking About My Generation work at the Disrupt Festival. And our ultimate aim, I would hope, is that potentially with the work that's created by the communities that engage with this project, is that when we do the full production, is that we could then have an installation or something, an exhibition of work that is able to travel with us as we tour the show. So that's me. Thank you.
Thanks, Suzanne. Really interesting introduction. And finally, I'd like to ask Kane Husbands to introduce. So Kane is a specialist in movement, physical theatre and choreography, and the artistic director of Papi Show. Kane,
go ahead when you're ready. Hey, thank you. I'm going to let the squad down because you three speak so amazingly, but I'm going to do my best. My name's Kane Husbands, and I work as a movement director and a choreographer and a facilitator, and I'm also the artistic director of a company called The Papi Show. And The Papi Show came about in 2012, actually just after I'd finished working on the Olympic and Paralympic ceremonies, which was amazing. Like, when I think of London back then, how insane was that time? I'm a huge Olympics fan, because I think it's truly celebrates difference from all across the world. So that's been a real kind of cornerstone of what the Papi Show's practice has been. And I think when leading the Papi Show, initially when we started, it was about bringing a group of people together to play games and to be in a room. And I guess from my own personal experience, I'm a mixed race man with a kind of complicated mixture of ethnicities all wrapped up in there. And I wanted my work in life to look like my friendship group. And I didn't realize that we were doing something very different, but we ended up working. The Papi Show's, I guess, footprint has been about working with diverse communities, and at times platforming people of color in leadership roles. And that's become our sort of mission. And I wanted to tell you about a couple of the projects that we did. So in 2018, so after a long time of just training, we came about as a training company. We didn't want to focus on output. It was about bringing people together to do movement and physicality and ensemble skills in a room, to play games and to see what came from that. But in 2018, we made a piece called Boys, which was with 10 men of colour, and it was a celebration of what being a man of colour in Britain and growing up in Britain is, and a true celebration of their manhood, and the complexity of what that is. And we toured that show, and it won a number of awards, and we continue to perform that show. And I think in total now there's about 30 men that have been in Boys, and they've become one of our wonderful communities that looks at difference, really. There are a real spectrum of people whose families span the whole world, but that has brought them all to this place right now. After that, what I'm excited, I thought I'd tell you about a project we're doing right now. It's called Black Girl Magic. It's with 10 black women. They're at the Unicorn Theatre right now today, and they're R&Ding a piece that is about work, about being a black woman, and it's for a younger audience. And I think it's never felt more relevant to be asking some of these questions. I thought I'd finally tell you about a piece that we did at Eltham Palace, which was working with a number of different charities and organisations. We were working with English Heritage, Metro Charity, the National Youth Theatre, and the Pappy Show were leading. And it was working with queer people, with trans people in the non-binary community. And it was reclaiming that space. I didn't even know that Eltham Palace had a whole rich history of being led by queer people. And it was like, let's take over this this heritage site, and let's bring the stories that in some ways have been hidden to the forefront, and to celebrate them. So the Pappy Show's legacy, or where we're moving, is about celebrating a whole array of different stories. And it's about giving a platform to the communities we think that often, maybe because of the current structure that we're in, mean that it's not always as accessible to get to the forefront.
Thank you very much, Cain. Well, thank you all for introducing yourselves so eloquently. So my first question for all of you, and I think we'll start with Shamira, is how do you think the pandemic has changed how artists are working with communities? And as both Shamira and Susanna have spoken about their work during the pandemic, feel free to bring in some of your own practice as well. So Shamira.
Yeah, thanks, Jo. This is a really interesting question. And I feel like it's an extension or an echo of how the pandemic has impacted all of our daily lives and work lives in general and nuanced ways. I feel a key shift is from location to technology. And maybe we could put that just in terms of the focus coming off of where are communities located in like geographical, physical locations? How do we get to spaces? How do we meet in spaces? And more because of the needs of working around the pandemic and keeping each other safe, more how do we make connections online? And in the same way that there are barriers in meeting people and bringing people to physical spaces, there are barriers in getting online and using technology. So there's different questions to address, always like, oh, who are we missing? Who are we overlooking in including here? So I think that one of the potentially positive outcomes of the pandemic and how the pandemic's shifting how we're thinking about connecting with each other is that maybe we've become a little more aware and more sensitive of the idea of individuals being isolated, those shielding because of the pandemic. But there are many who have been, that's an experience that predates the pandemic and will go on after it. And the feelings of being cut off and alone and the practicality of feeling and being isolated. And something about it being more difficult or not a preference to access physical spaces, but wanting to interact and connect. So I hope that that's something that is more on our radar when we think about connecting with communities.
Thanks, Shamira. I have one question in particular, actually, that I wanted to ask you. It's about access. And if you felt like the knowledge around access for people with disabilities have changed during the pandemic as everyone's moved online, do you feel like people's understanding of it has improved?
Anecdotally, for me, both as a recipient of art I've been accessing and what I've been trying to do, the difference that I've seen since Eugenie and I started our journey of trying to make our work accessible in various ways and stay within a small scale budget to now is really, really exciting. And I think that there's been some very innovative individual responses, but also things that should have been a given are more of a given now. This event is being BSL interpreted, and not just by one interpreter, but there's an acknowledgement that it would be overwhelming for one person to BSL interpret an entire hour, so we're going to have a handover. And there's the option of captions, and I feel like we can help each other to become more familiar with the just the things we can do. So yeah, there's more shared language, there's more shared resources, there's conversations happening and sharing of skills and experiences amongst artists, and that's becoming more commonplace. In terms of, I'm finding I'm not having to explain the concept of an extra access item that we might want to do for an event. It's already on people's radar, which is positive. I feel that it's still pretty slippery. Sometimes I kind of want to remind myself that it can be a bit overwhelming to the awareness of trying to do everything and not wanting to make mistakes and not wanting to miss anyone. I feel like we're all learners, and for something in SheGoat that we've tried to remind ourselves is that done is better than perfect in all things. So trying to really make a genuine connection with people and do one aspect of access thoroughly and well is valid, and sometimes it needs to happen in slightly wonky steps. You are going to drop some balls if you try and hold them all at once. So yeah, that's just sort of anecdotally my experience of how it's progressing.
Great. Thanks very much, Mira. And on that topic, I think we're going to have a switch over of our BSL interpreter. So we'll just wait for one moment. Great. Thank you. Thanks very much, Laura. So, Suzanne, I wanted to ask you the same question. So how do you think the pandemic has changed how artists are working with communities? And in particular, I wanted to ask you about geographical area and how you felt like the pandemic had affected that focus, because obviously with your work for Croydon Avengers, there's a real geographical focus in terms of the group that you chose to participate with. And I know that the work that you do in Myra Productions is very much kind of geographically focused often. So how has the pandemic affected that in terms of moving online?
I mean, it's interesting that obviously with the Croydon Avengers, it was very location geographically, you know, based, and that a lot of the work that actually happened physically in Croydon. Interestingly, with Benny and the Grey Cats, because actually it's a piece of work that is about Sheffield. Already the partnership working that Myra Productions, who is, you know, we're a London-based organisation, we were already working up in Sheffield. And I think that when the kind of pandemic, so in terms of kind of Zoom meetings and things like that, as an individual, you know, running a project that was happening in London and Sheffield, I was always used to kind of having phone calls and video meets, often not Zoom, but using other platforms. So in some ways, sort of transferring that side of things wasn't too challenging, because I'd actually been working that way. And one of the things that I really enjoyed about both with the Croydon Avengers, actually, because we toured that up north as well, and also with Benny, is that Maya has always been interested in telling national stories, not just things that are completely kind of locational or geographically based. So we were able to start to bridge that a little bit more easily. But in terms of actually the practicalities of running the project, well, immediately, yeah, we had to kind of investigate how to work online right at the beginning of lockdown last year. And I think, again, that was very much a learning curve for myself and our partners, Ignite Imaginations, in terms of how we were able to be creative online. And I think that since running that particular project, everyone has learned a tremendous amount about what are the opportunities that you get when you're actually with somebody who's in their own safe space. I mean, I think that's one of the things that is a real positive, is that actually people can actually almost be more expressive at times because they're in their own home environment. But likewise, that home environment, you need to be reminded of safeguarding and actually what that means. And so I think there are lots more things to actually really be thinking about when you are trying to work with communities and young people in terms of safeguarding when you're working online. And I think we need to recognize as well, you know, what the pandemic has done, has given everybody an individual experience of this pandemic. And for some communities, you know, they have had a greater impact than others. And so I think there's just that real need for any artist, any facilitator, to just be even more aware of the fact that the group that you are going to be working with will come with a plethora of experiences, and actually how you hold that space and how you're able to facilitate their own creativity. You just need to be really, really mindful of the fact that we all bring to a space something very, very different.
Thanks very much, Suzanne. Kane, I wanted to ask you the same question. So how do you think the pandemic has changed how artists are working with communities? And in particular, I wanted to ask you, because I know that in terms of your kind of ensemble work, fostering a sense of community is really important. So you kind of mentioned that with Boys. How have you tried to move this into a digital space, and has it been possible to try and kind of replicate this idea of community within ensemble practice into a digital space?
It's been so interesting, hasn't it? I've been thinking a lot about performance, and that performance has existed everywhere. It still exists. Like, even without the buildings, it's still existing. It's like, it's my aunt telling stories around the table and being other people. And it's, I don't know, there was a busker playing in the middle of the road. It's like, it exists. It's like, we've learned that at times being outside has felt safer than being inside. And I'm curious to know, what does that mean as we move forward and go into the summer? Like, what will that be for performance? And where are the places that those communities are going? Because in some ways, it's made me question audiences and where the audience goes. And maybe you don't get the diverse, rich audience in your building, but why should we be going there? Why now that everything changes, should I be coming to your building? I wasn't welcome before, so why should I be going there now? So maybe it's made me think that, who does the work? Maybe us as artists should be going to the communities sometimes, rather than just going, we expect them to do all the work and come to us. And in terms of the Papi Show, we've got a number of different companies, and we started to question, what do we need? What we don't need is to put on a show right now, but what we did need is connection. So it meant that we hosted talks every week for the whole lockdown. It's been a year of talks. and it's just been a Zoom call that people can drop in and out of those different companies and communities. And we facilitate discussions, and in some ways it's felt like we've got closer over this whole lockdown period, actually having big conversations about things like Black Lives Matter and holding like an all black space, or thinking in response to the police brutality, like, what are we going to do? Or thinking about how we support the marginalized communities that at the minute are shielding or aren't out there. It's like, what would performance for them be like? Or is it about a Zoom call? Or actually, is it about going to the care home and having a wave and a chat with your grandma outside? It's like, maybe that's what it looks like. So it's made us be really curious to think about, what do we need right now? And at times that was workshops. So we decided to host a whole heap of free workshops that were just on Zoom, that would get people's bodies moving, because we know we feel better after moving your body a little bit. And it also bridged a bit of you formed a bit of a connection, even if it was with a stranger. And we really grew this topic of having conversations and talking and just holding space where we could speak. And I've been thinking about, there's been like the word resilience has been bandied around so much. It's like, I don't actually know if we have been resilient or we just were thrown into a trauma that we had to cope with. I don't, like when I was thinking about resilience, we decided to create a mentoring program. And it's not because we know any better, but we thought that actually having a kind of someone you could lean on or be in contact with or speak with on a one-to-one, and to open that opportunity up meant that we took on 30 people and we said to our kind of associates, you could mentor somebody through. And one of those stories was like a young black man that I'm mentoring writing his dissertation on his mobile phone. It's like, that's resilience. It's like, but it just really showed to me the gap that actually moving it all online. My lights have gone out. actually moving everything online hasn't been easy for some people. It hasn't just been a direct transfer of making everything more accessible. It's actually just widened the gulf. And I'm still trying to practice or go on a continued journey of like radical self-care, of trying to prioritize rest as the pace of this world like gets quicker and quicker and quicker, that you're like doing meeting after meeting. It's like, how do we, I feel like if us as community leaders right now, it's like we have the responsibility, I think, to carve the new way, because what's familiar is the old way. And if we, I don't know if we do want to go back, we can't go back.
Thanks, Kane. That leads really nicely onto the last question I'm going to ask you all. And we'll try and speed through because I'm aware that it's 22 almost, and that the audience, we need to leave a bit of time for audience questions. But the question that I wanted to ask you all, I think we'll start with Kane because you just spoke so eloquently, Kane, and it's relevant to what you were just saying. So what do you think needs to change post-pandemic so that communities are more central to theatre and art making?
What needs to change? I think the hierarchies need to change. It's like they're actually... a few people holding the keys at the top isn't the way. It's like, bring us into the conversation, actually. Grassroots, we're seeing real change happen on the ground. It's like, how could we at the top be learning from some of that stuff? How could we question the ways we do things, not just the content of what we put on? I'm not interested in just seeing a show on this or a performance on this. It's like, tell me the process you did in making it that was more non-hierarchical, that prioritized difference at the, like from its conception, not just was like the decoration at the end. I love that we gain this term, performative allyship. I'm done with performing it. It's like, just do it. Be the ally. So I think I want to see change that is implemented from the top a little bit more. And I think we can start to, we can learn from what's going on the ground and how, like, I don't know, when Black Lives Matter happened, how we started to have protests organized protests. And that's continued into like throughout this whole lockdown. And I go, look, there's some organizational stuff that is happening that isn't about a few people, but it's actually really engaging a wide, vast audience.
Yes. Thank you, Kane. Agree with everything. I'm going to go to Suzanne next. So Suzanne, same question to you. What do you think needs to change post-pandemic so that communities are more central to theatre and art making?
So I completely agree with Kane about kind of leadership, and it's really important that leaders recognise and actively engage with the communities that geographically we've spoken about is one of the things. But obviously now we have this ability to connect with wider communities online. For me, key things are really kind of about the visibility and profile of role models from diverse backgrounds, whatever that might be, and actually making sure that that you can see people that connect with you, not only on stages, but in those kind of the gatekeeper roles, you know, in the backstage roles, you know, sort of. So one of the things that we're really keen on here at Maya, obviously, is about how we kind of change who's actually working in the industry, because I think that's really important for the way in which we're able to engage the wider communities, either to engage as audiences and want to come or engage online, but also about who is going to be making the art, who is going to be marketing it, who is going to be digitally producing it in the future. So role models are really important for me. The other thing I think is about longevity, legacy, long-term engagement. Having, you know, worked in community arts and theatre for many, many years now, I think that often organisations face a challenge where they'll kind of put on a show or work with a particular community once, and then it's not for another 5 years that they're able, that they kind of come back round to that community. And I think that actually thinking about how you can using now the learning from going online, how we can kind of engage people for more long term engagement. And I think the final thing I want to just say on that, and that is also about programming and allowing a diversity of stories to be told on stages. So it's about long-term engagement, but also having different stories and unheard stories, rather than producing things that kind of tell the story of a community in a particular way, and then we often get the same one a few years later. I think that's what I wanted to say there.
Brilliant, thanks Suzanne. And Shamira, finally, same question to you. So who do you think needs to change, what do you think needs to change post-pandemic so that communities are more central to theatre and art making?
Yeah, thank you, Jo. And I completely echo everything that Kane and Suzanne has said and all of those points. So just to add a couple of details, in terms of thinking also about what's actionable for small companies and individual art makers, I feel like we need to extend the positive disruption of these conversations about what's not working and what's unhealthy about our sector, and into how our spaces are, and kind of shine a light on what our own personal working practices are. This is sort of one area. So Suzanne touched on safeguarding, and something that we found within SheGoat is approaching meeting a community, inviting them into a space, and wanting to open up conversations that might feel vulnerable, wanting to be in a genuinely intimate and artistic experience together. We took you have a sort of responsibility and active care that you're hosting that space and you're showing up on an equal footing with them to learn. So we built a kind of charter, which is a shared bunch of agreements to ensure this is a safe space. And we take it upon ourselves to seek out feedback and nurture those relationships. I feel like a community continues beyond a project, and you don't just sort of drop a community once you finish the project. And in the same way, I think it's maybe a little unhelpful to think about communities as these entities that are floating around that we're trying to tap into as artists. Sometimes, we are seeking admission into a community and we're seeking them to trust us. And sometimes a community gathers and builds around a project. For example, with Human Jam, we still get email threads about protest interests, and those relationships continue. So I'd be interested in, as Suzanne touched on, a kind of longevity, and in a grassroots way, you continue the responsibility to the communities that you make an effort to meet. And as a sort of individual or small company, I would just consider arts within communities. This is arts. Art doesn't exist outside of community. It's in the same way that a performance doesn't exist without an audience receiving it in whatever shape it takes. So I would really think about why you want to connect with a community, what experience you want that to be like, what is the burning question, what is the area of interest, and it's not that you're bringing something, it's that you'd be discovering something together. So yeah, this is a question to come back to, because I feel there's a danger sometimes with community engagement and access that it's a kind of add-on or a tick box that strengthens a funding bid. And I imagine the fact that all of us are here today sharing this conversation means that we know that isn't the real situation. That's not a healthy way to think about it. But if you feel a kind of pressure and you're not sure how to approach connecting with a community, go back to basics on why does this project need to happen right now, and who is it for, and how is it for them? So, yeah, those are some of my thoughts on that.
Thanks, Samira. I feel like I could talk to you all for hours, and thank you for being so candid and inspiring, all of you. But sadly, my period is over, so we're going to pass over to audience questions. I think, I can't remember if we agreed that it would be Nick or Anna, but one of you is going to ask some questions from the audience.
Just ask if anyone has any questions for the panel. If you just drop them into the chat, we're going to try and condense them down so we can get through as many as possible. Or if you have one that you'd like to directly address to the panel, just use the little, either give me a wave or the little hands up icon. But otherwise, questions in the chat and we can feed them through.
As we wait for audience questions, may I ask something? Samira, at the beginning you touched on how you can embed community engagement in touring work, and obviously that's quite hard as you're moving through physical spaces to have, you know, a really valuable engagement in each place. So I just wondered what She Goat are doing in that area, or what the plan was. I know you got cut short, of course, last year.
Yeah, thanks, Anna. The plan that we conceived was to have these mini gigs, like 15-20 minute gig, and coffee, biscuits, tea in the afternoon. So Eugenie and I would be hanging out in this space, and we did one test run of these, which at Camden People's Theatre when we premiered the show. So it's sort of been a kind of response to some attempts, and this was the version that we arrived at that we felt would be most conducive to a sort of safe space and having these conversations. We make ourselves vulnerable, perform a bit of our show, talk about what the show is about for us and why we made it. And it is rooted in personal experience. And it is a kind of area of genuine investigation that we feel like there isn't the language. And sometimes there is, but it's unhelpful in order to express inexpressible, undefinable relationship structures and dynamics, and how that can feel kind of marginalizing. So we were working with Camden People's Theatre's community engagement officer, Daniel Fulvio, and I would really advocate for working with somebody who has experience in this realm. And it's a very beautiful skill to, and it's a full-time job. If you're making the work, you might not necessarily have the time to recruit, and you might not be aware of the kind of networks to tap into. So we collaborated with Daniel, and the plan was to do these afternoons when we were on tour, and then the show, they would be offered free tickets to come to the show if they wanted to on top of that. So that's, I know I've just absolutely splurged on talking, but that is the redux, like reduced version of what we'd planned. But I think that you could tailor, like this is an example that worked with a theatre gig show of that theme, but I think that that kind of way of approaching it, you could end up with lots of different ideas.
We have our first question. So what kind of funding do you use for your kind of community events and projects? I think that's for anyone who would like to answer.
I can speak about that. So Arts Council funding is definitely kind of central to making any of the work. In terms of, for Maya, we're a very micro organisation. We do spend a lot of our time fundraising, and it can be a real challenge. But I think our current programme of work, I suppose local trusts, actually, we, you know, with the work that we're doing in Sheffield, We have been, you know, successful with Sheffield Town Trust and kind of some Yorkshire-based trusts and foundations. So therefore we were talking about geography there. If you look at the kind of local area, then there may be some trusts and foundations there. Also supporting with kind of co-producers or partners, you know, sort of festivals, the Disrupt Festival. Again, that has enabled us to be able to develop some of this work. So it's kind of I think a mixed bag is what's definitely required.
Yeah, we're really similar with that. We, Arts Council have really helped us over the years. We work kind of to commission with people or in partnership or, and then because we've all, like our company's always never fitted in anywhere. We're not theatre enough. We're not dance enough. We're not. So we've just done it ourselves a lot of the time. We kind of, we have a rolling track of workshops that people, and we always have three kind of bands that you could pay, a small, a medium, or if you want to add more, and we always encourage you, or it's free, and we say, after you've enjoyed it, you know, if you want to go back and you realize you could offer something to the company, go back and donate to us something. And that means that whether we've had a venue or not, we've been making the work, and the work's going to happen. I'm like, it's happening, I'm not going begging for anyone, we'll make it happen ourselves. So it might just take longer, but we do have a little bit of a model that means that we can kind of stand on our own.
We had a question for Shamira. So how did you create the charter as a shared agreement? What was the process like, and is it accessible online?
Hello. Yes. How did we create it? Usually myself and Daniel identified the need for it, first of all, and thought that it would be good to have some ground rules that didn't feel like you're in danger of making a mistake. And Daniel had experience. He's also co-director of something called a company called Inky Cloak, who had begun running an online drama group for queer elders. And they had been building their version of a charter as a shared set of agreements for a space. So we kind of were adapting that to things that we'd learnt about being in physical spaces and things that we were imagining about being in online spaces. So it's a sort of list of tenets or like shared agreements. Like, for example, we'll not comment on each other's what we can see of each other's spaces and anything. This is a safe space. We accept that. We all make mistakes, we're all willing to learn, but we're showing up with intentions to connect, and whatever we explore and talk about in this in this space stays in this space, and we won't go on and share things that other people have shared outside. And so those are just some that I'm remembering off the top of my head, but that's something that we send to people in advance of the event, and then we recap all together to get us all on the same page. And it isn't available online because it's kind of come up through quite a personal way, but if that person wants to email CPT and get in touch with me, I can totally share that, and maybe that's something I can think about putting on SheGoat's website in case that's a useful resource for other artists. Was that the extent of the question? Is there anything I missed? Okay, yeah. Thank you for asking.
No worries. I don't know if there's no more questions in the chat, so Joe, I don't know if you have any further questions you want to ask, or if anyone still wants to ask some, just drop them in the chat.
I have one question. With Kane and Suzanne's work, mentoring is quite takes kind of quite a central role in your practice, and both of you have mentioned it. So I wanted to ask kind of how much you feel like the mentoring within the work that you do relates to workforce diversity, and how much it also relates to the community-based practice that you both do. Either one of you can answer.
Yeah, I can go. I said, like, it's so at the heart of what we think of, because it's like in the current industry, none of these people would be given the opportunity to be leaders. And yet I know your amazing voices to me and to our friendship group and to the people we work with, but we go, you absolutely should be a mentor to someone. We see you as a mentor. You've been a mentor in this group. So us being able to give the opportunity to platforming you and your voice and going, you should be speaking to somebody and be like a regular point of contact. Like, you're an amazing, inspiring influence. So for us, it helps us uplift some of the amazing artists that we know. But it also connects them with somebody who they don't know. And that widens our kind of community as well a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. Beautiful. Thanks, Kane. I think there's, Nick, there's another question, isn't there, in the chat, or someone wants to...
Yeah, if I can go to Nell first and then Netta following that. So, Nell, if you want to ask your question.
Awesome. Thanks very much. So this is just so much easier to speak than to write. So yeah, I'm just thinking about what we've been talking about with meaningful community engagement and how it doesn't really help to come in, give people an amazing experience for one afternoon and then go away and never see them again and no follow up. But of course, most of us as individual artists or as small companies, are kind of moving around and doing bits of work with bits of funding is kind of what we can do, right? So yeah, I guess my question is, like, how can we work with venues who perhaps have longer term relationships with certain communities? How can we best help those bigger organizations that have the resources to build those meaningful relationships to contribute in a meaningful way to those meaningful relationships?
Oh, go ahead, Suzanne, sorry. I think there is a question there about how central the idea, and I am kind of like, community engagement is to a larger organisation and how they then facilitate the work with the local community, if that's what they're engaging in. So, because I think that traditionally we have always had community engagement departments or education departments, and often the work can feel quite separate from maybe what is happening on a main stage. And so I think, but I genuinely believe that there is hopefully a drive now for the work to actually be more integrated within the organisation, and that I think that there is a need for larger organisations to be connecting with freelancers and smaller organisations who are working in and around their areas, because those organisations and individuals often are the ones who are connecting at the grassroots level with the communities or individuals that the venues could want to engage with. So I think it's about building the relationships between the smaller organisations and freelancers with those larger organisations, and there has to be an openness from the larger organisations to be wanting to actually do that and engage in those processes. So I think it's about them building partnerships and you going to those places, and also, you know, sort of just talking to different departments about the work that you're doing.
We're conscious of time, but I know we had a comment from Netta.
Yes, thank you. So first, I'll be very quick. I just wanted to say thank you for this panel, because I was really moved by the different projects that were described here, and I learned a lot. And I wanted to say two things. First is that I think I rediscovered the meaning of community during the pandemic, in terms of the word meant something a little different to me, and being self-isolating or being able to just go for a short walk and seeing a little bit people around where we still have to socially distance suddenly means something else. Those are the people around me. Those are the people close to me. And if I do some artistic work outside, then this is my community. And I wasn't aware of that even. I wouldn't have considered them maybe my community, my neighbors. So that's one thing. The other thing I wanted to say about the diversifying the industry and what Kane said is that I think that in the past year a lot of really good things happened, and I'm personally part of or participate in Migrants in Theater and also MENA Arts UK, which I think are brilliant organizations or movements that came up in the past year, and they're trying to do work that is also talking to larger venues and organizations and trying to make them commit to diversifying the repertoire and the way they work with artists, international artists or foreign born artists, migrants. And I think that that is brilliant. So perhaps we have a little bit of optimism here, hopefully, that the pandemic did bring an opportunity for change. And I'm really happy that the awareness around this is growing. So thank you so much.
Thanks very much, Netta. We've got one last question, which we'll ask quickly. Looking forward to what is the most important COVID-19 adaptation of process that you intend to take forward into your future arts practice? Whoever answers first gets to answer the question, because we haven't got much time to go around. So whoever feels like answering or has a good answer. Otherwise, I'll pick one of you. Okay, I'm just going to pick Shamira.
Okay, I love this question. Looking forward to what is the most important adaptation led from COVID that we're going to take forward. And yeah. Eugenie and I have been having a lot of conversations about this. We feel like there's been a bit of a kind of loop, an unquestioned loop in how art gets made, in terms of how do you get a venue to believe in you, secure the funding, then you premiere it, and then you have to tour it. And we're trying to have some positive disruptive thinking about that, because the things that are really interesting to us are kind of like different moments along that journey, but the actual journey feels a little unhelpful and a little exhausting in certain ways. So we've also shifted our practice online into digital realms, as I know so many of us have, and we found it really interesting how that means we can reach different kinds of ears, different kinds of audience, and connect differently with people. We have gotten into making audio art, and we're trying to work out how to create a really live, connected experience when your art is digital, and maybe you're not delivering it present and in the same, like you can't take the temperature in the room with how that person is receiving it. So we feel like the answer might be more hybrid dissemination of work. And we're already interested in how do we reach bodies in a space and digital bodies? How do we do like alternative versions of our work? And I know this isn't particularly radical, but it is an extension of investigations that we're doing. So a work exists as a live show and as a podcast series and as a workshop activity. And yeah, a work that you're making, rethinking it in different forms and structures. I think that's something that we're going to ask, and we are going to take forward the idea of having we have a sort of working alliance or set of practices that we maintain to make sure it's a safe space. And as a twosome in the room, that is quite manageable. But we are building a kind of dictionary of terms that we help each other to sort of self-regulate and to co-regulate and to come together. And that's about actually having useful evaluation and useful check-ins rather than something that you just have to do because you've got to write an activity report, which is a document you put at the end of a grant to close off and get your final percentage of funding. So, yeah, useful, truthful evaluation and looking after each other, because ultimately we're just people in a room wanting to make stuff. That's a sprawling of ideas of what Chigo is going to try and do.
Thanks, Shamira. All incredibly interesting stuff. Nick and Anna, we're at 6 minutes past.
We are going to be booted out in a moment. So thank you very much, Joe, for chairing. Also, thank you very much to Kane, Shamira, and Suzanne for your wise words, and also to Anna from Barbican who coordinated. For anyone who's staying for the next session, which is Fundraising for Independent Artists Beyond the Arts Council, we are going to close this room down and reopen the same link just before that session, which is at 12:30, so that we have time for our speakers for that session to join. So thank you all very much for sharing. Thank you all very much for being here, and we hope to see many of you at another stamp session across the next 2 days. Thank you all very much. Lovely. I'm going to close the link. Thank you all very much.
Thanks, everyone. Nick, does the recording just download onto my desktop?
I think it does. That was not me sounding very confident, was it? I'm pretty sure.
Thanks so much.